Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Create a brighter future for your employees with Zurich Corporate Pensions. Trust excellence. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more.
Great to hear this. Pharmacists in England will be able to write prescriptions for some conditions in plans unveiled by British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, which he says will transform primary care in the UK. Patients will effectively be able to receive prescription medicines and oral contraception without seeing a GP. And there have been calls for the same to happen here. I'm joined on the line by GP and Associated Clinical Professor of General Practice at UCD School of Medicine, Dr. Ray Wally, and also by Sheena Mitchell, who's a pharmacist at Milltown Total Health Pharmacy in Dublin, who's been campaigning for this to be introduced here in recent months. You're both very welcome to the programme. Straight up, Dr. Ray Wally, I'm told you believe this to be a very, very bad idea. Why?
We need to look at what is happening in the UK NHS, where there is a gross shortage of general practitioners. We have a healthcare system in great disarray, more so than even our own healthcare system difficulties. And the big concern here is that it will fragment care. The success of general practice in our own healthcare system has been based on continuity of care. That has been evident with the reduced excess mortality rate to COVID. It has been evident by the excellent target achievement that we received in regard to vaccines for COVID as well. And that is the major concern.
Okay. Sheena, you want to make this happen?
Absolutely. And patient care has to come first. This is really all about equality of access for the patient. And we all know that patients want to be looked at within their communities and in their neighbourhoods. If you look at it even from a practical point of view, we have a situation here where, unfortunately, just like in the UK, we have severe GP shortages. We have a situation where 43% of GPs that are in practice now are currently over the age of 60. We also have an issue with where they're located. So 85% of them are in urban centres, which leaves only 15% of them, you know, in rural settings. We have added complications then where we have a growing and ageing population. Mm-hmm. And the HSE have, you know, predicted 46% need increase in need for primary care in the next 15 years.
But what about Ray's point about continuity of care?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot there. And I suppose traditionally pharmacies and GPs have had very strong relationships. And obviously this is about collaboration. There's nothing more important than maintaining that strong working relationship in the name of patient care.
And couldn't continuity of care, the integrity of it, Ray, be continued with a little bit of collaboration between GP and pharmacist?
Well, if we actually stick first of all with the level of access, I'm reading that the Irish Pharmacy Union have indicated that pharmacies face closure because of the shortage of qualified staff. That's a submission that they made in front of the OCTIS in August 2022, and that many pharmacists are closing, so I'm not too sure where the staffing is going to come in regard to this. In regard to collaboration, one of the successes through COVID was that we had the launch of the Chronic Care Programme, which won first-in-class award in September 2021 in the United Nations, whereby we provide chronic care through COVID as well in general practice. And as part of that contract agreement, when negotiated, we agreed that we would have pharmacists coming in, embedded in pharmacists, because we need to be practicing at an evidence-based level.
But hang on, the answer Sheena's point about a little bit of collaboration could protect the continuity of care. Go on.
From that agreement was that we would be collaborating with pharmacists coming into surgeries, whereby we would be expanding the GP team, because what we want is evidence-based changes that have effect. So there is evidence that we have many 100 million chronic disease prescriptions with up to 10 items, if not more, and what we need to do is work with pharmacists in optimising this to reduce inappropriate referrals to emergency department with complications from medications. And that is an evidence-based model we want to work on. In fact, that is being studied at the moment with the HRB.
So are you agreeing then? Are you agreeing with the principle that pharmacists could prescribe some medicines if there is adequate collaboration?
Well, in that format, the pharmacist would be working as a part of the GP team. There is a potential of basically conflict of interest with pharmacists outside prescribing the medications they're also purchasing.
How so?
Well, as a general practitioner, I can't. I basically would have a conflict of interest if I'm prescribing medication that I'm also purchasing, so we don't do that.
Okay, that's a fair point, Sheena, isn't it?
I'd actually love to respond to a couple of things there that Dr. Rowley said, and I'll start with the conflict of interest. So what pharmacists are looking for is remuneration for a service. This has been successfully rolled out in the UK, and there's strong data that shows that in Scotland, the 25% of the consultations that happen are literally, you know, advice or refer only. So there's no treatment actually recommended, because traditionally pharmacists are stewards of medicine safety, and that would be part of our continued role. So we're not looking to be, I suppose, you know, incentivized to prescribe.
But you are looking to be allowed to prescribe, isn't that right?
Yeah, and actually, we are looking to be.
So answer the conflict of interest point. Because if I, as a pharmacist, stock the red tablet but not the blue tablet, am I incentivized, if I'm allowed to prescribe to patient X, patient X comes in to me and I say, I think you should take my tablet?
I'm not sure what red and blue tablets you're talking about. But
do you understand the point I'm making?
I do.
Yeah, so can you answer the conflict of interest point then?
Yeah, there is no conflict of interest, because we're not asking for incentivization to prescribe. We're asking for remuneration for a consultation, which could result in three different outcomes, one of which is advise, one of which is treat, one of which is refer. Even if we just give advice, we should be remunerated for the consultation that we are providing.
And the point two then, treat, are you saying that you should be allowed, pharmacists should be allowed, diagnose and prescribe treatments, medicines?
So there was actually a study in 2021 published by the Canadian Pharmacist Journal, and it was a really big systemic review from the perspective of antimicrobial stewardship. And it showed that pharmacists actually reduced unnecessary prescribing for conditions like acute pharyngitis and UTI.
Yeah, that's very interesting. But the question is quite simple, Sheena. Are you saying that you should be allowed, pharmacists in this country now, be allowed diagnosed without a GP being involved in the procedure, that a patient walk into a pharmacy and the pharmacist diagnose and prescribe medicines that require a prescription? That's essentially what you're looking for, is that right?
It is under safeguarded measures.
And
so
our
pharmacists,
here's a key question, I'll come back to Ray on this. Are pharmacists qualified to do that? Sheena?
So in terms of pharmacist skills, yes, we are actually assessing for clinical suitability every prescription that we see. While obviously, you know, we refer patients to the GP, and that's often how they present at a GP setting, we are actually the ones who have already assessed their symptoms and advised them that they need clinical treatment.
Ray Wally, is that your interpretation as well? Are pharmacists qualified to diagnose and prescribe medicines?
Well, certainly our training, which is minimum 9 years of training with experience of dealing with consultations on a daily basis, is a different training than a pharmacist training. I'm not trained as a pharmacist, so I can't see that they are trained in the same way as a general practitioner. Now, this discussion is also happening in Australia. So, for example, one of the things they want to do is to prescribe antibiotics for urinary tracts. And in Australia, the Royal Association College of General Practitioners, the Society of Australia and New Zealand, Urological Society are against it, the Royal Australian College of Surgeons have written in a submission, and there is great concern that what we're going to have is inappropriate prescribing, inappropriate
diagnosis.
But
why? That's a key point, because if pharmacists are qualified adequately to diagnose a patient and to prescribe, then all of the points that Sheena is making are valid about equality of access and access being more prevalent.
So if somebody makes an appointment with me, they come in to an appropriate setting, they come in, we take a history, we do an examination, we lie them on a bench and examine them, we discuss the diagnosis, we may send off investigations in regard to it. So, for example, there's a move away from using dipsticks in urine checking for infections. We're doing more midstream urine investigations. You can present with different causes to urinary tract to symptoms, and you need to examine somebody physically specifically in regard to it. They are not a trained in regard to examination the same way general practitioners. We're very aware of what we can miss when we see somebody. It is a totally different training. If we look at what is happening in Eastern Europe, which whereby you have widespread antibiotic activity availability in pharmacists, we've increased in resistance, higher incidence of MRSA. We're not mentioning the jurisdictions where this already happens. So there is great concern in regard to that.
So you're saying basically it's far more complex than allowing a patient walk in off the street and be allowed to be diagnosed and prescribed. Can I ask you finally, Sheena, and briefly on this one, would you be, if it were to happen then, would you be happy for pharmacists to be held accountable to the medical council?
So pharmacists are regulated by a robust regulatory body known as the Pharmaceutical Society of Ireland. And I just want to point out that obviously Ray is talking about, you know, access and patients go into that GP setting. But remember that patients don't have access to GPs currently, and that situation is only going to get worse. Talking about putting a pharmacist into a clinical GP setting is irrelevant if there's no GP settings in the rural area.
I understand that, but if in the regulatory question, if you're allowed to go in and get a diagnosis and prescription from a pharmacist, as you are from a GP now or a doctor, should the regulatory framework change for pharmacists?
The regulatory framework will be adapted. So our regulator will remain, as far as I'm aware, the Pharmaceutical Society of Ireland. And they will work to ensure that we have safe procedures and protocols. We are not talking about managing severe disease here. We are addressing people as their first point of contact within the community, where we can offer a service to advise them whether, you know, over-the-counter remedies may resolve their problem,
okay,
to treat their minor ailment if it's needed, or to refer them to a GP or hospital setting if needed. But we do need to address the situation that patients cannot access healthcare, and it's not right for the people of Ireland.
I'm hearing you both loud and clear. Sheena Mitchell, pharmacist and founder of wondercare.ie healthcare podcast, and Dr. Ray Wally, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme. You can text us to 51551.